You're listening to the Embrace Running Podcast. I'm Mark.
I'm Elena, and this is episode number 119 for April 29th, 2014.
Welcome to the podcast, where we talk all about running, big races, maybe this week specifically, Big Sur.
Yeah.
So we're just off of the Big Sur Marathon, which we ran this past weekend, 2 days ago. We're recording this on a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So we're 2 days into recovery. So I think that's going to be the main topic of today's conversation.
Yeah.
Kind of recapping that, sure, and letting you know how it went and what the race was like. So, and we'll do a little bit of news kind of before that. Basically, not much to say about our weekend training because it was a taper week.
Right.
And I think we recorded last Tuesday or Wednesday or something like that. So not much to say. I did my last run going into the race on Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday for
you. I'm forgetful. Yeah, Thursday. You did your last run before the race on Friday. So, no, yeah, I'm surprised you didn't do a shakeout run day before or anything like
that. Well, I knew we were going to be walking a bit on Saturday, so I figured I'd just rest my legs.
Beforehand,
so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's just kind of jump into the news from this past week. Let's mention races that just happened this past weekend. Big Sur Marathon, obviously. Ragnar Trail, Zion, which was an interesting one. Glass City Marathon, Nike Women's DC, Garmin Half Marathon, Blue Ridge Half Marathon, Country Music Marathon, New Jersey Marathon.
Lots of marathons. Big marathon weekend.
Right. Lots of stuff going on. Let's start with kind of with Boston. We talked a lot about Boston.
More marathon news.
Yeah, more marathon news. We talked a lot about Boston last week. Obviously, that was a big event. A lot of stuff going on. I think the news, or the kind of the buzz about Boston this past week was, I guess, more on the negative side or the ticked off side, however you want to look at it. So the story was about people copying bibs.
Mm-hmm.
And running Boston like that. So apparently, I think the one article that kind of made its rounds and was the most obvious was this one woman who apparently four people actually somehow made copies of her bib.
Right.
And ran the Boston Marathon with her bib.
Yeah.
So in the article, there's pictures of the four people that did it. They all have the exact same bib number. They all look like legitimate bibs.
Yeah.
Although I think the big
from
question,
what we can tell on the
from
picture,
what you can easily tell.
Yeah.
The one thing you will notice is they kind of don't seem as wrinkled or messed up as they should be. So I think they got copies of the bibs, but they didn't maybe copy the typical paper that a bib is made out of, which
would be difficult to do, I would think.
Yeah. So she did, the person that they copied did post her a picture on social media beforehand. Although, really, all you need to copy somebody's bib is to see one bib.
And yeah, it could be anybody's. And then
yeah, you
could
just make up a number. So, I don't know if posting to social media is really a big issue or not.
Yeah.
To post your bib. Because, really, I think if your number gets stolen by somebody else, it's just probably random chance and doesn't have much to do with anything.
Right.
Most of the time.
Although, does it make it easier to copy if somebody posts their specific bib versus just any bib?
I don't know. I mean, they all basically look the same.
Yeah, I know.
So, I mean, first off, I think it goes without saying that it's pretty wrong to do that. I mean, you're basically stealing. You didn't earn your right to run Boston Marathon. There's two ways you get into Boston. It's you run the qualifying time,
mm-hmm,
or you run it as a charity runner and you raise the money for the charity. So that's the two ways to do it. That's the rules. That's how we know to do it. To basically just steal somebody else's bib. It's just wrong. I mean, that's all I can say. It's crazy.
I think it's pretty plain and simple. Like, just, it's wrong.
Yeah.
It's unethical.
Yeah. And it wasn't a case of just this one article with these four people. There ended up being several accounts, mm-hmm, of people stealing bibs to run Boston, which I never really thought of copying bibs as a big problem.
Right.
But to see it for this Boston, I don't know if this Boston was one, just a lot of people wanted to run it. I don't know if this happens as frequent at other Boston or maybe Chicago, New York or something like that. I don't know.
Or did this one just have more attention to it?
Maybe.
Who knows?
I know some people were upset about it because from a security standpoint, I don't know if the security thing is much of an issue because it's not like they do background checks on runners or anything. So, you know, they're still checked for, you know, the same bag requirements would have been instituted on these people anyways. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's not like I think there was any security risk by these people being out there,
mm-hmm,
but they certainly didn't have any right to be out there, and they shouldn't have been out there, and it's totally wrong to be out there. And in some ways, I don't think they should be proud of their accomplishment of finishing the marathon if they did, because they went about it the wrong way to do it to begin with.
Right.
The one that kind of became the poster child this past week was, separate from that article that showed the four people, was the wife of the CEO of Foursquare, apparently, after some tweets, everybody figured out that she actually did the same thing and copied somebody else's bib to run the race. She wanted to run it with her husband. Her husband was there, or I think they were both there the year before. He didn't get to finish, so he was a legitimate runner to come back as one of those that didn't get to finish.
Right.
But apparently, what they said was they felt the need to kind of go back and do it together.
Mm-hmm.
So there was even tweets from her said that she was trying to basically buy a bib.
Yeah.
Which is...
leading up to the day.
Which that, to begin with, is against the rules.
Yeah, that's a whole nother problem.
That's a whole nother problem. I don't have as much of an issue with that one because, I don't know, if one person can't run the race and they give the bib to somebody else, or I don't really like selling it, but... at least you're not taking resources that shouldn't have been there to begin with, if that makes any sense. But yeah, so she ended up somehow making another bib. They picked a number. It's funny because how they picked the number was just they wanted one close to her husband so they could start in the same corral. So that's why she actually picked the specific number that she picked. I think it was probably a dumb decision to put your Twitter handle on the
on
front
it.
Of your bib.
Right.
They both had that, so you could easily figure out, once you figured out, hey, that was a stolen or a copied bib, and her Twitter handle was right there, which kind of led to everybody saying, hey, this is the wife of the CEO of Foursquare.
Well, plus I think he have like Foursquare on the top of his bib too, so
yeah. So it was kind of easy to tie all that back together, which was pretty dumb on their part, but they shouldn't have done it in the first place. I think a lot of people were upset because, even more upset because, hey, this is the CEO of a company, and you know, I don't know, they have means, maybe, you know, she could have done it as a charity runner earlier on and all that kind of stuff. So they did end up apologizing, although I think a lot of people were very upset. I think a lot of us made a lot of fun of it this past week. I did too. I posted my Big Sur bib on social media before the race, but I hid my number just as a joke.
That's right. I forget
I don't want
you did that.
Stealing my bib.
Your bib.
And I actually said I didn't want
or
Foursquare.
Or copying your bib.
Yeah, I didn't want Foursquare specifically stealing my bib number, but... a lot of people made fun of it. A lot of people were just upset. It kind of, I think they would kind of say they had kind of maybe a privileged attitude that they could just do whatever they want and decided that they wanted to run Boston. So they were just going to copy a bib and go out and run Boston.
Right.
So
because that's what they wanted to do.
Yeah. So I don't really know what else to say about that one besides don't copy a bib. It's completely wrong and I don't think you should do it. Anything else you want to add to that?
No, I mean, do we want to talk about, we actually heard from somebody in terms of what they thought should be done.
Yeah, so to kind of jump, I mean, we heard from Dave who sent us an email, and he kind of had his opinions on what should happen to these people. He said, first off, you know, Boston should bill them for their entry fee plus a penalty. I think that's fair.
I think the penalty should be $500 million.
Might as well just go crazy, right? And then two said that the city of Boston should issue a citation for, I guess, illegally running the race.
Right.
And then he said a lifetime ban from the Boston Marathon. And... yeah, he just basically said, you know, it makes him sick as well, and it's about as low as you can go in the sport. Which, you know, I kind of completely agree with. Copying a bib is something, I guess I've read of it happening in the past, but it just never occurred to me, which is a good thing. I feel good that it never really
never
occurred to me.
About
like,
it.
Hey, I should just copy a bib,
right.
You know? And we hear about bandits who just go out there and run a race, and somehow copying a bib...
seems worse, right?
Seems worse, right? Yeah. It's like a premeditated...
yeah,
thing. Although if you're just
like
going
really
out there running,
planned out, yeah, I don't know. It does seem a little different, even though they're both wrong. It does seem different,
but
like a different level of
yeah.
Wrong.
You took it to like this. I need to copy and, you know, forge it and make sure I got the right number and it looks the same. And you know that's a whole nother level of wrong. So I can't really disagree with Dave said. You know, I'm definitely for. You know, I think they definitely should. I think they were going to donate money to charity or something like that. I think they ended
which
up saying that or something.
I mean,
like
which
that,
is
but,
great,
but yeah,
just do that. Just do that in life in general. That doesn't. That's not to me. That doesn't nullify the fact of what you did.
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think, I guess if I was the BAA and I was deciding, I guess I would have no problem maybe throwing her because she's actually it's not him that ran illegally, but I think she could get maybe 10-year ban. I'm fine with that. I'm also fine with a lifetime ban too. But
yeah,
I guess if I was doing it, I wouldn't.
I'd say
be
more
so...
than a year.
Right.
I wouldn't just say 1 year.
Yeah, I see a lot of races that, I think, didn't we just talk about that recently too? That do the 1 year ban.
Right.
And to me, that doesn't seem like enough.
Oh, yeah, that the Marine Corps 17.75. Yeah, we talked
about
that. The
1 year ban doesn't seem like enough. So I think.
Maybe like five. I think five.
See, I'd go 10, but okay. That's just me kind of falling in the middle.
Yeah, and I'm okay with lifetime too, but I think it's got to be more than 1 year.
Right. So that's that. That's just kind of the story that went around. And like I said, I got a, you know, very upsetting, yet it was pretty funny.
Right.
And a lot of backlash against the company Foursquare because of this. And this is the CEO. And
exactly.
The wife, and a lot of people saying they'll never use Foursquare again. And, mm-hmm. And all that stuff. So.
Right. So some people already doing a lifetime ban.
Right.
Foursquare. There you go.
Hey, there you go. All right. Let's move on to, just want to mention Ragnar Trail Zion was this past weekend. Was a very interesting race. Ragnar Trails is a 2-day race. So it's always on Friday to Saturday. Mm-hmm. And you run through the night based out of your campsite.
Right.
And
it's a relay.
Relay Zion in Utah. And it's just really funny. They ended up having to cancel the race because of a snowstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up canceling it, I think, in the morning on the Saturday morning.
Yeah, on the second day.
And it's just really crazy. And we're mentioning it because there's some pictures that are crazy in that it's a, I saw pictures of team photos on Friday.
It looks like a beautiful day. Arrive.
It's a beautiful day.
Everybody's like in short sleeve shirts, shorts, you know, just like sun's out. Everything's good.
Looks fantastic. Looks like it would be a blast to go do.
Right. And less than 24 hours later, what
their
do you
Saturday
see?
Morning picture.
Right.
Everybody's bundled up.
Mm-hmm.
There's snow everywhere.
Right.
It's
everything's
snowing.
Covered like in white.
A completely different story to the point where you almost don't believe that it's the same race less than 24 hours
right.
later.
Yeah.
So I think they ended up having to just cancel the race in the morning because I think there was issues with, number one, it was just so cold out there. The weather wasn't expected. Kind of a surprise to get the snow, for sure. It was hard to see the course markings out there. And I know a lot of the, they said a lot of the ground was just freezing and they described it as just kind of ice skating out on the trail. So definitely a little bit dangerous, but quite an inexperience. I think everybody kind of made the most of it and tried to have fun. And
but it sounds like they did the right thing, the safe thing, by
absolutely.
Calling it early.
Yeah.
Making sure they got everybody off the trails in one piece.
I would have loved to have been there just for, you know, it's one of those, like, I did this crazy experience.
Yeah.
You know, I did this race and you won't believe it started snowing like crazy in the middle of the
night. Let me show you the pictures.
Yeah. Yeah. This was 10 hours later. Yep. You won't believe this. So just wanted to mention that. Other news, Rock and Roll Series. They had a Brooklyn 10K, which has been postponed indefinitely. I think that was supposed to go off this coming October or November.
And they've had that event before.
Yeah, a couple.
It's not a brand new event.
I think they brought it in 2011, but it's been postponed indefinitely, and they say they're going to work on bringing a half marathon to the New York area. So I don't know if they'll bring back the 10K as part of the event or
just the half.
Just ditch that for some kind of half marathon. Mm-hmm. So that's not.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, R&R is kind of always making their.
Making changes all the time.
Yeah, seem to me their business decisions, which I can't blame them for. I mean, they're a for-profit company trying to put on big races and, you know, good events, but make money too. So they got to kind of go with what's popular, what's not popular, maybe. Cater to certain areas, capture certain audiences, I guess. Other news out of. This is Canadian news here. Krista Deschaine was leading the Canadian Half Marathon Championships on Sunday in Montreal when she started to feel some discomfort in her left leg with about 3.1 miles left in the race. She managed to hobble her way across the finish line, finishing third in 1:16. Pretty fast time.
Mm-hmm.
3 minutes behind the winner. And according to the reports, she had an undiagnosed stress fracture, which turned into a full fracture of her femur. And she ended up having surgery after the race to repair the break. Needed a plate and 3 screws.
Crazy.
There's a video of her coming across the finish line, which I don't know how you finish a race with a broken leg.
Yeah.
That just seems crazy.
I guess that's how.
That's beyond.
That's insane.
I think that's beyond my ability and my dedication. If I got a broken leg, I'm taking the DNF. And
you're collapsing right
somebody
then
carry
there.
Me back to my car, please. But that seems credit. So I give her big credit on finishing the race and getting it done, which is amazing. But might not have been the best decision, actually.
Right.
But. But yeah, that's the thing, stress fracture. Sometimes, a lot of the times, you don't know you have a stress fracture.
Mm-hmm.
Other news, Nike Women's San Francisco race you've done a couple times, a few times.
A couple times.
They made the announcement just recently, or
just
was it today? They're only going to have a half marathon.
Yep.
So no more full marathon.
No full marathon this year. Yeah, they made that announcement, and they said it was based on feedback, runners' feedback, I guess, in terms of feedback over the last 10 years and then also growing popularity of the half marathon. So they decided to just offer the half marathon distance this year in October.
I can't say I'm surprised.
Right.
At all. I think I've mentioned several races where it seems like the full, you know, where there's a half and a full marathon, the full marathon kind of seems like an afterthought.
Right.
Or
not the main.
Yeah.
Not the priority by any means.
So I think if if the marathon's going to be this small afterthought or secondary thing, then you might
maybe
as well
it's better
just,
to not have it.
Yeah. I mean, if I was putting on the event, I probably would get rid of the full two and just concentrate on the half, because that's where all your participants are and where all your money is generated. Mm-hmm. So, not surprised, and I don't think anybody is particularly going to be that upset about it if there wasn't that many people doing it to begin with.
Right. I think the only negative feedback that I found on Facebook was people that had already planned that as their full marathon for the fall, and so maybe passed on other things, like Chicago is an example where they already had lotteries for it.
Mm-hmm.
And other people who've already made travel arrangements for it based on the fact that they would be able to run the full. Although to me, the flip side to that is it's a lottery. So you were never guaranteed to do it anyways until you went through the lottery process. So, but that's the only negative feedback I've seen.
That's a good point. I like you said, I would agree with it, except for the fact that it's a lottery and you don't know if you're in anyways. Although, was there always a lottery for the marathon? I've never paid attention. It's just a lottery for everything, right?
Yeah. Okay. Regardless of the distance. Yep.
Alrighty. So that, I think, wraps up kind of the news from the week.
Mm-hmm.
We'll jump into our Big Sur International Marathon coverage.
Yeah.
Throw the international. I really don't know still what the definition of making your race an international race.
I don't know.
How many countries maybe have to be represented?
No idea. I've never even looked into it.
Alright, so Big Sur International Marathon, which is here in California, along the coast, Highway 1, supposed to be it is. We were there. I can vouch for it. A very beautiful scenic marathon mm-hmm. to do. The marathon goes from Monterey. No, you don't go start in Monterey. You start in Big Sur, California. Right. And you actually...
Hence the name, Big Sur Marathon.
And you travel north to Monterey.
Towards Monterey. You don't get back to Monterey. You're in Carmel.
Correct.
Yeah.
Let's not.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, if we're really going to talk about the course.
Yeah. Basically, you just head 26.2 miles
up the
north
coast
until you stop at the finish line.
Right.
Which, yeah.
And everybody tells you to stop and you get your medal. That's where you stop. Very close to Monterey.
Right. So how do we want to get into this? We went down there on Saturday.
Mm-hmm, so day before.
Day before, because you got to go to the expo to pick up your...
Right.
Your stuff. All your stuff. We should say that there's several distances, actually, mm-hmm. on race weekend. There's obviously the full marathon. There's also a 21-mile race,
mm-hmm.
which is, that's kind of a unique distance.
Yeah.
And then there's also a 10.6-miler.
Right.
Those all basically travel along the same path. You're just not going
They're just
as
starting.
Far.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they also have a 9-mile race, which that actually varies quite a bit. You actually go out to a place called Point Lobos. So that's slightly different. But, kind of several options there on race day.
There's also a 5K and then the full marathon relay.
Oh, I forgot about the relay.
The relay. How can you forget all the school buses that you see every once, like periodically?
Well, I can tell you why.
You did see those, right?
I did.
Okay.
But you know why I always forget about the relay? Because it seems like the races that I'm personally familiar with that have relays, you know, we were just talking about the marathon being a secondary thing.
Right.
The relay always seems like a very secondary thing to me. You know, whether it's CIM that has the relay, Big Sur has the relay, although there might have been more people at Big Sur doing the relay.
Really? I thought it was more at CIM, but who knows?
I don't know. Yeah. And then I remember R&R Arizona. I don't know if they still have a relay. I don't know if they
used to have one?
Yeah.
Oh.
Nobody did it.
Interesting. Okay.
I think so. I think I'm correct in that. I'm kind of going back in the memory. But my thing at the time was there's nobody doing the relay. So I didn't see the point. But you are correct.
Okay, but bringing it back to,
you are correct
to the different distances, lots of different options.
So there's actually,
race day.
You know, if you want to participate out at Big Sur on this weekend, there's a lot of options for you.
Yes.
I mean, I guess the one thing that's obviously missing is there's no straight up half marathon.
Mm-hmm.
Although you can go back down to Big Sur and they do put one on.
In the fall.
In the fall. Mm-hmm. So,
which is kind of cool if you want to do the full and the half in the same year, you could.
But it's a different course, though.
Right. But I'm just saying, like, you could.
That's true.
Do both distances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, back to where we were starting.
Yeah.
We went down to the expo on Saturday. It's right down there at the conference center,
mm-hmm.
kind of right in basically downtown Monterey. Everything's based out of Monterey. That's where most people are staying, is in Monterey.
Right.
We went down there early on Saturday, headed out to the expo. We actually, it's funny, we got to the expo and we kind of skipped the pickup and actual expo floor and went straight for the speaker series that mm-hmm. they have going on. They have a dedicated room. Was it the Steinbeck room?
Yes. Good memory.
Thank you.
Wow.
That's a surprise, right?
Yeah.
Which is kind of a small little, I guess I'll call it a little theater there.
Mm-hmm.
and it's dedicated just for the speakers, and it's nice because you get nice seats and a stage, and it's quiet, and it's kind of separate
from everything else that's going on.
I'll thank Heather for the fact that Heather from SF, she kind of turned us on to that and kind of let us know that
that's how
it was, and it was pretty cool. And so we looked at the schedule beforehand. That was part of my list last week, right? I was nailing this stuff down.
Right, planning everything out.
So we kind of picked kind of what we wanted to go see. So we went there straight away. The first session we caught was actually Runner's World. Bart Yasso was there kind of leading the Runner's World little session.
Mm-hmm. It was like a panel with some of the Runner's World editors talking about the course specifically, Big Sur, and then just some other running related information, but really with the focus on the Big Sur Marathon. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So we sat through that one. That was kind of interesting hearing Bart Yasso speak a little bit as part of the panel. Got a chance later, but and kind of hearing some stories from Big Sur, giving us a little bit of an idea of what to expect the next day, maybe some strategies for the next day. I think Bart Yasso was kind of saying that Big Sur wasn't maybe as tough as people make it seem, maybe. And he thought you could definitely do a negative split. And he thought that was kind of the way to go.
Yeah.
So we sat through that. That was pretty cool. And then as soon as that was over, we kind of headed down to the expo. Oh, got our bibs. Got our bus tickets because we needed you have to shuttle to the start.
Right. Everybody has to shuttle to the start. No other option.
Yeah, there's no, once we talk about the start.
Nobody can
like
drop you off or anything. Yeah.
Picked up all that stuff, headed to the expo. I guess I'll call it the show floor. And kind of just, floor. I don't know.
Well, we went to the De Anza room and picked up our shirts.
You actually know the name of the room?
I do.
Wow, that's really impressive.
I don't know why. Yeah. So, picked up our long sleeve tech shirts.
Yes.
Yeah. Different color, men's and women's.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you're about to say? And then I stole your thunder.
You stole my thunder.
Sorry.
Shirts. And then we went to the expo and booths and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of about the size. It's actually a pretty good size considering the total number of participants over the weekend. It's a pretty good size. ASICS had their big layout with the official merchandise from Big Sur. So lots of opportunities to buy official Big Sur merchandise in addition to your race shirt, which they had some cool stuff. Obviously, all ASICS gear.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we walked around the show floor, kind of your typical stuff, you know.
Different shoe manufacturers, different races, promoting the races.
Right.
Ghirardelli chocolate. Yum.
Yeah, they didn't have caramel. I would have liked
the caramel. Dark chocolate, which is the best. Okay.
So yeah, we checked that out for a little bit, and then I think we bounced out of there, right, to go get some lunch.
Yeah.
Walked just downtown. Mm-hmm. Picked out a place, went to go get some lunch, did that, and then it was kind of back to the
Expo.
Actually, I think we went to the hotel first.
Oh, yeah. We dropped off our stuff. All within walking distance, which is nice.
Right. Yeah, that's actually something really cool was we stayed in a hotel that was basically right behind the conference center. So you just walk on over and downtown's right there. So you could easily walk to everything. And I liked it because anytime I can kind of get away from the weekend and not have to drive.
Yeah.
It's a big plus for me.
Yep.
Lunch, we actually dropped off our bags. And I say one annoying thing was that we got with our bibs and our shirts was our gear check bag, which is, it was a Goo branded bag, just plastic, nothing you're going to save, not like a drawstring bag or anything like that, but it was just the cinch plastic bag, which I really missed having a drawstring bag that you could wear as a backpack.
Yeah.
Because I got tired of carrying it around.
I know, that really bothered everywhere. You. Yeah.
I was just annoyed. I was like, this is so hard to, I know, first world problems, but it was just annoying to kind of carry it around, and I think I was the one that said, let's go back to the hotel and drop this stuff off because I'm kind of tired of carrying it. I don't think I was the only one, but yeah.
Yeah. On the flip side, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. So.
So then we headed back to the expo and we ended up catching Bart Yasso again.
Right.
But this time
it was just him.
It was just the Bart Yasso show.
And it wasn't just specifically about Big Sur. It included information about Big Sur, but it was just kind of about him and different races he's done. He had a slideshow, which was really interesting too. Different places he's been. Mm-hmm. Different, you know, unique races. So he's a really good speaker. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've never heard him speak in person like that before. And I agree. I thought he was pretty entertaining and pretty good to listen to.
Yeah.
So, we did catch that.
That's one of the things I'd definitely recommend is not even just for this race, but if you ever have a chance to hear him talk, do it. Yeah.
And like we said, it was a really good environment to kind of, had the time that day to kind of just hang out, it's kind of, hang out and listen to the speakers. I mean, the one caveat is kind of, you know, we're here in San Francisco Bay Area and going down to Monterey, Carmel area is probably something we each have done a ton of times.
Right.
So we didn't really need to go sightseeing or catch anything down there while we were there. So that's why we figured we would just hang out at the expo and kind of listen to people talk a little bit.
Although I think if we were traveling from further away and hadn't been to Monterey, Carmel area, there's plenty to see, plenty to do. And you want to do more than just like an overnight or even two nights. If you really want to make a trip out of it, you can do several days there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's where I was going with it. You know, if you're not local and you're just coming down for the race and stuff, you'll probably want to be, you know, you might want to go check out the Monterey Bay Aquarium, which is very well known. You want to go spend some time down at Cannery Row. You might go visit Carmel.
17 mile drive.
Lots of things to do down there. So if you're not local and you've never been to the area, it's a really cool place to, like you said, spend a couple days and do some of that other stuff. And in those situations, I would say maybe skip some of the expo stuff and go out and check out the surroundings.
Right.
Or like you said, if you got
More time. Yeah. I'd say if you can, don't even skip the expo stuff. Just make that a whole day and then add more days to your trip.
Good suggestion. So yeah, we caught that one. I think we were going to try to catch, I think Jeff Galloway was after that, but we ended up not coming back. And then Dean Karnazes was actually there as a speaker too later in the day. And we didn't catch that one either. So we caught a couple things, but we didn't catch everything.
We didn't catch everything.
And then, so that night we actually met up with some friends. We ate down at the wharf.
The old Fisherman's Wharf, which was also walking distance. Mm-hmm. That was great.
Yeah. So more, I don't have to drive. Yes.
Yeah.
Had a really good dinner down there. It was actually really good. A little bit heavy on the stomach. Just trying to, you know, you kind of try to avoid that kind of stuff the night before.
Mine was okay.
But it
wasn't too heavy.
But yeah, as far as the taste of food, it was really awesome. So that was good. And then it was kind of off to bed early.
Right.
Because this is an early rise race. So race start was actually 6:45 a.m.
Right.
For the full. But you have to catch a bus to the start line. So, and this bus has to take you from, you know, it picks you up in several different locations, you know, depending on hotels and stuff where you're staying. But you basically have to be taken by bus 26.2 miles to the start line.
Mm-hmm.
So
down the coast.
Down the coast.
On a two-lane highway.
Very windy.
Yeah. Which is going to be closed off for the runners. So they have to make it down there and back out.
Right. Out of the way.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what leads you to a very early start.
Yeah.
I think the bus ticket we were handed was 4 to 4:15 a.m.
Pickup
was our pickup time, and we were there in downtown, actually I think outside the Marriott, which is an early start, so that, you know, to get over there at 4, I think popped up at about 2:45, I don't know, somewhere around there. I think I kind of like to get up in the morning and have some time and not be rushed, so I know that some people like to probably get up 10 minutes before they got to head out the door and do it that way, but I don't like to do that so much, so
yeah. Which we've mentioned before. Yeah. We're early birds in that sense. Birds. So
that's really early. And it is tough. Did try to go to sleep. Had a hard time sleeping a little bit. I normally sleep a little bit better. But yeah, it's not because I was stressed out about a race. I think it's just, you know, you go to a hotel and it's...
Not your bed, not your
pillow.
And, not your environment. And plus, you're trying to sleep a lot earlier than you normally would.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, you're trying to go to sleep so early that, you know, normally I'd be up for 3 hours longer. But,
right.
But yeah, so early start, headed towards the bus at right there around 4 a.m. and out to the Marriott. And everything was super well organized. People were over there pointing you in what direction to go, and headed straight to a short line where we hopped on a bus and began our long drive down the coast, which it's pitch black outside. You can't really see anything.
But right.
I know I was looking out the front of the windows of the bus looking, you know, oh, this is uphill. This is downhill. How steep is this? I was trying to kind of get a lay of the land of what we were going to be running.
Yep. And I think at one point I'm like, oh, there's the light from the lighthouse that, you know, I keep reading about that we'll see.
But yeah, it was kind of a long drive. I think I actually did fall asleep towards the end of the drive because our other friend that was with us, she asked some question to me, you know, what was that? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't know. I was sleeping. You know, I finally was able to doze off. So
yeah,
that was actually kind of nice. I wish I would have been able to sleep the whole drive.
Yeah, and it was like over an hour, I think, for us to get to the start area.
So you get down to the start. You get dropped off by your bus, and the start area is very, very small. I forgot actually where it's at. It's like some inn that's there.
I
forgot the name.
I could like see the sign
that
we were right next to, but yeah.
So, you know, there's not a ton of room for people to kind of hang out or kill time or anything like that. So there was lots of people just sitting on the ground, lots of people sitting on curbs. They did have lots of porta potties around, but it was still pretty dark. So I think we got there and we were kind of just looking for a corner to kind of go sit down and hang out. And I did see one guy who must be a Big Sur veteran. He was super prepared. I think he basically had a sleeping bag and looked like to me he was sleeping.
Yeah, he probably was.
So
yeah, this is it's at Big Sur Station, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's not tons of room around there. And the way it is the start line's actually on the highway, but nobody can go out to the highway until all this busing and shuttling is done.
Right.
So that's why you're kind of a little off the road on this little section of grass and dirt and parking lot. And there's not tons of room. Like I said, you just find a little corner.
It just feels like you're at a big turnout.
Yeah. You know? So you just kind of find a spot and sit down and hang out for a while.
Right. Do what you got to do. What you got to do. Eat when you got to eat. Yeah. Get your stuff ready. Figure out what you're going to wear.
You know, make trips to the porta potties. I think there was plenty of porta potties. Mm-hmm. Amazingly enough, because I don't know, it didn't seem like that many, but the lines were pretty, pretty quick.
Yeah.
If you found the right lines to go to. And,
They also had, water, I think Gatorade, coffee,
yeah.
Bagels, bananas, and then safety pins in case you needed them, and Vaseline for any potential chafing area. So they had some other things.
Yeah. So we got closer to gun time, and there's three waves. Mm-hmm. They're basically self-seeded waves.
Right.
They tell you kind of what the times are, you know, from this time. If you're planning to run this time to this time, you're wave two. If you're planning to run this time to this time, you know, elites up front. So three waves. And the way they have to do it is they actually have to call the slowest wave first, wave three, because they kind of need to push you back out on the road.
Yeah.
Away from the start line. And that's kind of the only way to get it. So they call wave three first. I think they call them round 6:10. 6:15?
Yeah, around there. 6:10, 6:15. Really, so about half an hour before it would start.
Yeah. And then they call wave two, and then eventually they'll get wave one in there with the elites and all that. We were both in wave two. It was kind of hard to... It's very crowded out on the road at the start line. It was kind of hard to get into your wave, essentially.
Yeah.
Very crowded. I think we ended up just kind of shoving in where we could, because there was already a lot of people
there
and around. So I think I started for sure a little bit further up. We probably both did.
Than we had planned on it.
So, other than that, this, you know, race went off at 6:45 with the first wave. I think it was only a couple minutes to the second wave.
Yeah.
And we began
less than
our race.
Less than 5 minutes.
Yeah, less than five. I think.
Close to five, but less than five.
I don't know where I read somewhere, but my start time was 6:49. I don't know if I got that from my watch. I mean, by watch, I mean phone, but, or if that was official
I'm like,
tracking.
Watch?
Well, you know, because I use my GPS.
No, I know,
phone,
but I'm
so.
Like, you don't wear a watch. Okay.
So to me, it's my watch. Yeah. But. All right. Yeah, I went off at 6:49, something like that. So the weather was
The forecast initially was probable showers from like 7 to 10 a.m. or something. So
which
we kind of prepared
right
for that.
Right when you're ready.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. But when we were there, it was, maybe somewhere in the 40s to start?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but dry.
Mm-hmm. And stayed dry.
And stayed dry the whole day.
Which was a big deal.
Yep.
I mean, the one thing I should say is, I had a throwaway on before the race, and I also brought a garbage bag with me, and I ended up throwing the garbage bag because it was cool just standing around. And then, you know, you end up sitting on the ground. So I think this is a race where you definitely want to bring a Mylar or a throwaway or bring sweats if you're going to check it type of thing. Have that to keep you warm before the race. Kind of important for this one anyway. But yeah, 6:45 start. The weather, you know, at the start and once you start running was perfect at the beginning. The race starts out pretty quick. It's kind of downhill right out the jump. And I think the first
And then everybody's
few miles,
so excited, you know, and it's a downhill. Everybody's just taking off.
So everybody kind of gets jamming. And it is a two-lane road. And at the beginning, you get both lanes.
Right.
It's not too far. A couple miles in, you're basically directed to use one lane only.
Mm-hmm.
The lane closest to the ocean.
Right.
Because, you know, they know you want to get those pictures and those views and all that good stuff. And then the other lane is basically left open the entire race for course marshals and medics and emergency vehicles and for race officials to kind of move up and down the course. Mm-hmm. So you're on one lane of that highway the entire time. But yeah, you run those first few miles kind of up in the trees in that area.
Yeah.
And it's kind of nice. You're just kind of up in, you know, what seems like the mountains and lots of trees. And this is a race that through the whole thing, there's not exactly any crowd support.
Right.
Because
they don't you really have access to
there's,
it.
There's truly not much between Big Sur and Carmel.
Yeah.
Or there's really nothing. So there's no, you're not running through cities or towns. So there's no place for people to come out and kind of cheer you on. There's not much in there.
Yeah. I mean, the most or some of the crowd support that I saw were there's different inns and campgrounds that you kind of pass through. Right. And so it's people that are staying there that come out. Or then you're passing people doing the relay that are waiting for their person, you know. So, yeah.
And if you're doing the relay, they bus you out to wherever your location is.
Right.
And at those relay stations, like you mentioned earlier, there's always the buses stay there.
Yeah.
Kind of just on the side of the road. So at every relay exchange point, there was four or five buses.
Right. Like, you know, it's coming.
Because you see the buses.
You see the buses and they were that yellow school bus. So very distinct.
Yeah, so I think it's, you know, first 4 miles, maybe something like that. You're kind of surrounded by trees. And then after four, you get into mile 5, 6, 7, and then you really start hitting the coast and you start getting your views.
Can see the lighthouse.
Yeah, of the ocean. And you're not right on top of the ocean at that point, but
definitely see it.
You can see it.
Even though it was a little bit cloudy, I mean, it was still a really good view.
Yeah.
Over the ocean, even that early on in the day.
So you have that at that point. The one thing that is always a fear at Big Sur is the wind.
Mm-hmm.
That can really make or break whether you're going to have a fun day running 26 miles or you're going to have a really difficult day. And for some reason, we lucked out on the wind in that there was none.
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 At all.
So that's pretty rare and works perfectly if you're planning to run, because if you have to run 26 miles into a headwind, that's just
tough.
That's
a whole different story.
Yeah, that's just tough and takes a little bit of the fun out of it. You're going to have to work a little bit harder. But no wind, which was awesome the entire time. We'll get to it later. I actually got a little bit warm at the end, but was actually looking for a breeze at that point. But
I was thinking the same thing, and I even said it a couple times, too, out loud. I'm like, oh, I could actually go for, like, a slight breeze right now. It would feel good. Or you would feel just the tiniest breeze, and it was like, ooh, that feels nice, and then it'd be gone. So that was later on.
So, yeah, the first, you know, 8, 9 miles, you know, as you get into mile 9, you get closer along the coast, and, you know, the views kind of keep getting better as you get into, you know, mile 7, 8, 9, 10. When you get to about 10, you get to the bottom of the biggest climb on the course.
Right, where there are some taiko drummers.
Which is cool.
Which is really cool.
Kind of well known. They're there every year.
Yeah. They do have, of course, entertainment at varying places, locations, too. So, yeah. And all kinds of different things.
Yeah, kind of oddball things, too.
I mean, all musical-based, essentially, but just
no jugglers this time? Was we talking about that?
No. Somebody did bring their little miniature ponies, though.
Yes, we saw two of those.
I was like, oh my gosh. So, anyways.
But yeah, you get to mile 10, and it's the bottom of the climb up to Hurricane Point.
Right.
Which is the toughest, biggest climb. If you look at the elevation
map. It's very well known.
If you look at the elevation map, or the chart, you will absolutely know what we're talking about, because it's this really big peak in the middle of the race. And it's a 2 mile, I think it's about 2 miles, right?
Yeah, it's like essentially from like around 10 to 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got the taiko drummers at the bottom kind of giving you the beat as you begin your climb. I should just mention they were not on break when I came through there.
Oh, yeah, right.
So they were actually playing. Everybody was actually on this time. So nobody took a break when I came through, thankfully. So I thank them all for that. Although I actually heard the taiko drummers stop right after I passed them.
So then they waited this time for you to pass and then they took the break.
So, so that's a big, tough climb. It's 2 miles. It's not easy. It's about what I expected in a climb.
I was going to ask that actually, what you thought about it in terms of what your expectation was ahead of time.
Yeah, I think it was actually maybe not as tough in terms of steepness, but it was just, it's long. You're just kind of out there for a long time on this climb because, you know, obviously you're slowing down and, you know, it's 2 miles and that takes a pretty big chunk of time just to get through it. But I definitely, for myself, when I went through there, I peeled off for some pictures several times. So get some nice views, even along the climb, which is pretty cool. So anything out the climb for you? What you expected?
It wasn't as bad as I expected.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So that was good. Not to say that it was easy, but it wasn't as bad as I expected. Mm-hmm. So, and that first mile, I think, was a bit steeper than the second mile. So
yes, it was.
So it was kind of nice to have a little bit of a relief, you know, after like that first mile, like, okay, it's going to be a little less steep now. And then we'll be done. So.
Yeah, you get that little break in the middle where it kind of
plateaus a little bit, and then it starts climbing again.
So you get to the top, Hurricane Point. I mean, the nice thing is, you know, it's called Hurricane Point because of the winds up there, and they weren't there. So that was awesome. I'll take that. What goes up must come down.
Right.
So it's very fast actually coming down off of Hurricane Point. So I ran very fast down off the hill. I think at the end we'll kind of talk about a little bit of our individual experiences. But I was definitely running fast off at that point. And then the next thing you come across is the bridge.
Bixby Bridge.
Which is very well known. You see it in lots of pictures from the coast and especially from the Big Sur race. It's actually in some of their logos.
Yeah.
So, you get to the bridge. I know I peeled off there to take more pictures because, you know, taking pictures of the bridge is pretty cool and the coast and it's a real good view.
I think I ended up doing kind of like what I did in R&R SF, where, you know, you catch like the first glimpse of the bridge, you're like, let me take a picture. And then you get closer, you're like, this is a better picture.
And then a better picture.
Oh, wait, this is, So one thing I didn't do, which I saw other people do and I wish I kind of had, was after you cross a bridge, turning around and taking a picture of it.
Oh, I did that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, good. I didn't do that. So, all right. And then after the bridge is another well-known entertainment spot, I guess is what you would call it, which is a pianist. Tuxedo.
Yeah, tuxedo. You know, professional.
Exactly. And I think when I was coming through, he was playing Chariots of Fire.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it was kind of funny. I was just cracking up.
Yeah, and it's just a unique sight because if you see pictures of it, you have, you know, this beautiful coastline, you have this bridge, you have, you know, hundreds of people in the background running, and you have this guy playing this beautiful black piano
right.
in a tuxedo. And mm-hmm. Young guy, Michael Martinez, right?
Yeah, Michael Martinez.
Is his name, and he's out there every year playing. So I know everybody kind of looks forward to that. And
right.
lots of people stop and take pictures with mm-hmm. him and the piano. And it's a great picture spot, like you said, to kind of look back on the bridge
yeah.
And take shots of that. So,
which, by the way, we keep talking about all these great views. We'll post some pictures. So
yeah, we'll put a full album on Facebook and Google yeah. Plus so you can kind of see what in the world we're talking about.
I mean, I know we've each individually posted some pictures over the weekend, but yeah, we'll do a full album.
Yeah, so you get past the piano and then the race just continues for a bit.
It's that's kind of funny. When can you say that in a race? Yeah, you get past the piano and then
well, I mean,
and then the race continues.
You know,
no, it's just the, you know, plays on the uniqueness.
Yeah. I mean, the big landmarks kind of out there, you know, to break up the races, you know, you have Hurricane Point, the big climb and descent from that, and then you get to the bridge and the piano along with that.
Right.
And, those are actually the biggest kind of markers
mm-hmm.
And to get into later in the race. But yeah, it's still kind of downhill from there, and then you kind of get into some rolling ups and downs
which is pretty much going to be the rest of the race, the kind of rolling.
Definitely rolling
yeah.
throughout the whole time.
Still great views.
Fabulous views.
Yeah.
I really think this is a very beautiful race to go do.
Yep.
It's very unique. Like I said, you know, most races that we do, unless you're doing a straight up trail race, it's not often you get to do a road race, which stays away from the city.
Right.
In its entirety and gives you beautiful views of the coast and this winding road, and you're kind of just, as they say, what is it, running on the edge of the
western edge of the
I don't know what they say
yeah
there, but basically running on the edge of the United States here and getting beautiful views and this mm-hmm. rugged coastline. And you know, like I said, this is a coastline I've driven many times before, but it's a very different, unique experience being able to run it and stop in places that you could never stop in a car.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So it's definitely a very different view, but it's very beautiful, very unique.
Yeah. That just made me think when you said running in a place where you wouldn't normally be able to stop and take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they did have a lot of, like, course marshals and medics on bikes, a lot of cyclists.
Right.
And I know there was a couple that were cycling close to us, and people were just thanking them. And it was just funny because he goes, no, he's like, thank you. He's like, if it wasn't for you guys, I'd be having to deal with a bunch of cars riding my bicycle up and down, you know. So we just thought it was pretty funny that, you know, he can kind of enjoy the road too. So, yeah.
No, I mean, we should say, you know, there's aid stations spread out just like you would expect. There's actually 13 in total
mm-hmm.
throughout the entire race. And I was surprised at how small the aid stations were.
Yeah.
But there was no problem with them.
No.
There are plenty of volunteers, plenty of
water.
It's
just not quite what you expected, right?
Like,
yeah. There's no issue with it.
Right.
You're just like, oh, not as big.
It was kind of, I think in a couple of them, there was, you know, it seemed like, and I could be wrong, one Gatorade table and one water table. Probably was a couple extra, but it just seemed small, but no problem getting water, no problem getting Gatorade.
Nope.
Even when I came through. And the volunteers did a great job. As far as, you know, because we mentioned this race is kind of out in the middle of nowhere to some degree, you know, there's no cities in between. They had lots of course marshals out on bikes.
Right.
They basically just kind of rove the course going back and forth. They have medics
doing the same thing.
Emergency personnel doing the same thing on bikes going
back and forth. Station close to aid stations.
Yeah. And then they also, I saw, I think it was fire department or Cal Fire out there, actually had a vehicle stationed at one point along the course.
And I actually saw a couple of stations with like ham radio operators too.
Yeah. Ham radios.
Saw that, so.
Because cell signal out there is either at certain points non-existent mm-hmm. or really crappy.
Right.
They get amateur ham radio operators out there to kind of shore up the communication along mm-hmm. the course. So I actually felt very well taken care of.
Yeah, absolutely.
From a safety standpoint.
Yep.
Almost more so than I would do in
other races.
Races that are in the middle of cities.
Right.
You know, granted, there's always cars and businesses that are along the course, but this seemed like there's much more dedicated personnel out there to mm-hmm. kind of take care of your safety.
Right.
Which I thought was pretty cool. I'm losing my voice here.
You better get it back. We have a long ways to go. We're only like halfway through the course here. But when you were talking about aid stations, just might as well talk about it now. They had goo at two aid stations, and mm-hmm. then they also had fruit at all aid stations beginning at mile 10.4.
So, which I was kind of oblivious. I don't take fruit during the race.
Well, you don't take fruit outside of the race.
I'm not a big fruit eater. But
yeah,
I really
won't go there.
I didn't really
yeah.
notice it that much until they'll end up having strawberries at mile.
We'll get to that one.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, no, so they essentially had bananas, orange slices, in terms of fruit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is nice. I think I like that.
Yeah, and for me, in terms of the aid station, it actually works out perfect because the official drink was Gatorade, right?
Mm-hmm. That lemon and lime.
Lime, which is probably
which
my
is what you drink.
My favorite
I mean, when
flavor.
You do drink it, that's what
and
you drink.
And they had goo was the official. I know sometimes I say goo when I mean gel, but this was actually goo, which is probably my favorite. So it actually worked perfect for me.
Yeah.
It's kind of like they asked me, what would you like, Mark? And I,
right.
you know,
You're like,
I
this
would
is
like
what
Gatorade
I would like.
And goo. And they said, okay, here you go. So that worked out perfect for me anyway.
Yeah. And I kind of felt that way, but in a different way. So
okay.
That's interesting for
Same
different
but
reasons.
Different.
Yeah.
So, all right. Should we get back to the course here?
Yeah.
A little
so
bit.
So where were we? We were like...
probably like 17, 18. Sure. And like I said, it kind of just continues with the rolling and the views. You know, all these views getting so old, you know, these beautiful views of the coast and the water and the shoreline.
You,
and
you
all
do
that
see
stuff.
Less and less people pull off to the side to take pictures as time goes on, and people are starting to kind of, you know,
what?
Like
you're tiring
work
out a bit,
and
right?
yeah, and you're just like, oh, do I really want to take this picture? You know, so you just see less people doing that.
Yeah, because early on, it's lots of people peeling off, take pictures.
Right.
I think I told you I felt a little bit similar to how I do at a Disney race, in that in Disney, you're kind of. Mm-hmm. You're pulling off if you're doing all the character stops and pictures. And this, for the middle part of it, kind of seemed similar in that, oh, let me pull off here and take, you know, picture of this. Let me take a picture of the lighthouse. Oh,
yeah.
Time for the bridge. And kind of lots of peeling
and
off
then
to
hop
take
back
pictures.
On
yeah.
Of course.
So it kind of felt very start and stop for that middle section. Anyways. Right. But yeah, you kind of continue on. And I think the next kind of marker is mile 22,
mm-hmm.
which 22 is kind of marked with a nice hill.
Which probably feels just as bad as the hill leading up to Hurricane Point, because it's at mile 22, even though it's nowhere near close to that elevation.
The hill at mile 22 is much more difficult, and not straight up in size in terms of the climb was as long or as high as it was at Hurricane Point.
Because it definitely isn't.
It isn't, but at mile 22, it just kicks you in the gut.
Right.
Right when, you know, maybe you trained to 19, 20, 21 miles. Maybe you did 22 in prep for the race, but you're getting into that area where in your training, you haven't gone this far, and you're getting to the end of the day, and the temperature's kind of warming up a little bit, and mm-hmm. the sun's definitely on you at that point because it actually got clearer as the day went on. And then you get to this climb at 22 that, although I saw it on the map before we did the race,
mm-hmm.
I was very familiar. I think we even talked about saying, oh, that 22 looks kind of tough there on that elevation chart.
Yep.
And so I was expecting it.
Yeah, it wasn't a surprise. We did study the elevation
right.
chart and the map and everything before.
But it definitely seemed extremely difficult when I got there for me personally. Like I said, definitely kicked me in the gut. And that was kind of, for me, when my pace got more difficult at that point. But so it was just, I think, a little bit steeper than I expected, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed real long. I don't know if it actually was, but it seemed really long. So I think the two real toughest parts of the course is that 2 miles up to Hurricane Point, and then mile 22, whatever you want to call that. You're basically getting into Carmel Highlands there,
mm-hmm.
Where you're actually getting back to civilization, kind of.
Right.
And a little away from the coast a little bit. So, tough part of the course. And then you get to the top of that, and you get a little bit of a downhill, and then you're really kind of rolling to the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's one last climb at 25.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
But you skipped an important piece.
Oh, I skipped your strawberries.
Yes.
Okay,
so
tell
us
about the strawberries.
That is like a huge highlight. So... come on, let's talk about the important stuff.
So where was that at?
Between, or pretty close to 23, I think just past 23.
Oh, okay.
So they're like these famous strawberries that are really good and everybody, you know, has to eat. Okay, not everybody, but, you know, you should really eat some. And, you know, there's a lot of people there, you know, they're fresh strawberries, like freshly washed. They're taking off the little, what do you call them? The green, I can't think of what it's called. The little green.
Stem?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Taking off the stem. They have them in these big bowls. And I was super excited for them, right? And so I kept waiting for them. And I knew they were around 23, but I didn't know where. So past like the 23 mile mark, I'm like, oh, okay, they got to be here like soon. And then you go a little ways and then you actually see balloons
mm-hmm.
in the shape of strawberries,
yeah.
like lining the,
so you
the
know
course. It's coming. And I'm like, yes, they're coming. So excited. And I did eat like a whole handful, or I don't know, like 5, 6, 7. I don't know. I ate a couple while I was there and I just grabbed a handful and like was running with them. I'm like, this is weird. I've never like run with just strawberries in my hand, you know, and just the juices like falling out of my fingers. But they were really good.
Mm-hmm.
They were really good.
Okay.
Yeah. I like would have gone back and gotten more. If, yeah.
You should have.
If I was by myself, probably.
You should have.
Yeah.
I think Bart Yasso was telling a story about during a race, he went back for ice cream. So you could have gone back.
I should have gone back
for the
strawberries.
Had time.
So. Yeah. So worth it. Yeah. Stop for the strawberries unless you just absolutely don't like strawberries.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on.
So moving on. Back to the finish.
25,
like
there's another little incline.
Yeah.
Which, again, at that point at 25, it feels a lot tougher.
Than what it should be.
Than if you were doing that at mile three, you know. So.
But after being out there for hours, that's another little, like, kick, but
right. And the last couple of miles was starting to warm up too.
It was.
So, and sun's definitely out. There's no more cloud cover. You know, you're definitely running into the sun. So it was starting to get a little warm, and so of course going uphill feels even tougher mm-hmm. when it's warm out. More views of the ocean.
Yes, even yeah. right into the finish line.
Yeah, right into the finish line.
So, yeah, you come up to your finish
more
line.
More crowd support.
Yeah, lots of people kind of lining the finish line.
A lot of buses kind of going by you, school buses with like the relay participants.
From the very early on.
Right.
Yeah, you come across the finish and lots of people and lots of stuff going on. You get into their marathon village is what mm-hmm. they actually call it.
Yep.
Which they have soup and you get your typical post-race bananas and bagels and they had cookies and
chocolate
milk. Oh, thank God. Chocolate milk.
Yeah, pretzels. Yes. And they actually give you a little tray, yes. a little cardboard box so that you can put your food in.
We always talk about that. We're always appreciative, you know, for races that are going to give you a bunch of goodies post-race. You need a way to carry them. So it's always nice when you get a bag or a little box or something to carry. That way you're not shoving your pockets and kind of trying to
figure out how you're going to
carry
it.
The baby cradle carrying thing with all the food.
Yep. And they also had strawberries, by the way.
Strawberries.
Yep.
Did I say soup? I think I mentioned
soup. You said soup, yeah.
What
but
else?
But soup was in a separate area.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's it. That's all I remember right there. And then, of course, they have like the massage tent and merchandise tent, different charity tents, different sponsors. It's just like a big grassy area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know when I got there, it definitely seemed very crowded and not a lot of room.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where I know when I was finished, I was just looking for, we'll get into our races, but I was just looking for a place, any place to sit down. I was ready to just...
Collapse right there.
Collapse in the middle of the field there. I didn't care. But it definitely seemed crowded, but I'm probably not the best. I don't think I was in the greatest mental state after running 26.2 miles, so I might not be the best judge because I actually didn't hang around too long after I finished. I basically finished, caught up with you and some friends, and said, let's go, and headed straight to the shuttle bus, which was easy to get to,
mm-hmm.
and they were right there, and we actually hopped on super fast, and the shuttle got us out of there and back to
great
downtown.
Volunteers knew exactly what was going on, where to direct us, because, you know, shuttles are going to different places, so...
Yeah. So, yeah, well organized at the finish. Like I said, I would have liked a little bit bigger area, but I think that's just limited to there's not a lot of options on where you can kind of put an event like this on down there. So it's basically there or nowhere because you basically just have to do it 26.2 miles from mm-hmm. where you started from. And there's very even more limited places to where you could actually start the race. So you're just kind of stuck with that with what it was. So anything else on the finish line?
It was pretty accessible even for me, like when I came through and mm-hmm. then I went back to try to get to the finish line. It was pretty accessible to get back to.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't like you had to walk a really long ways or...
Yeah, no, it was right there.
Yeah.
And then the one thing is, you know, we did mention that there's several events going on throughout the day, but because they all start early, that basically if you're a 10.6 miler, you probably, most of them kind of finished and are kind of out of the way and gone before a lot of the 21 milers come through and then the full marathoners come through. So it's very staggered. So it's not one of those where everybody's finishing at the same time and the finish area is, you know, this crazy commotion with everybody coming in at the same time. So I think with the way they time the events and the distances, I think I'm assuming everything is spread out
mm-hmm.
pretty well. I can't say that for a fact, but I'm just assuming based on times.
So. Right. Yeah. And for our beer people out there.
Yes.
They did have Michelob Ultra, which kind of seems to be the beer at big races. But you did get a complimentary beer. I don't know what you needed to do, you know, but as a runner, you would get one beer. I don't know if you need, I'm assuming you needed to bring your ID there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so just for those folks who enjoy their beer after a race.
Okay. So that's kind of it on the general stuff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, do you want to talk anything about how your race specifically went?
Why don't you go first?
Me?
Yeah.
Mine might have been a long one.
You want me to go first then?
No, it's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I went out there to do this race with, I wasn't focused on time, mm-hmm. per se, because we are doing Mountains to Beach in a month, and I figured if I want to run a faster time or get a PR, that would be in a month.
Right.
And this would just be a really long, super tough training run.
Yeah.
So I went out there. I did start the race kind of fast, because it does open up pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't run with a pace group at all, because where we ended up seating at the start, I couldn't get back to the pace group. And I never ended up seeing them after that. So no option on the pace group there. But I definitely ran pretty fast early on in the race and felt pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, kind of looking, you know, I definitely was out there walking a lot of the hills. if not most of the hills. Mm-hmm. That was kind of my plan and my strategy going in was, you know, Hurricane Point 2 mile climb. I wasn't going to try to run it. I did very little training on hills going into the race. The flip side to that is coming down. I'm pretty fast on the downhills and had no problems with that. So I was able to, I guess, essentially make up some time on the downhills. Right. And I felt really good. I know one issue is because of the downhills, your quads might get kind of beaten up. Mm-hmm. Mine felt fine the entire day. Didn't bother me at all. So running downhill fast was not an issue. But Hurricane Point, I walked 80% of it.
Like leading up to it?
Or the actual climb.
Yeah.
Yeah. Up Hurricane Point, that 2 miles, I walked a lot of it. I think I ran pretty strong, pretty well through, I think, 17 miles. And then I was telling you, like, 18, 19, 20, 21 I was still consistent.
Right.
But I definitely slowed down a bit at that point. And then.
But it was like a consistent. You had slowed down to like a certain level and then like plateaued there, kind of.
Yeah. And then I got to 22 where I just like got kicked in the face by that hill. And it was kind of all struggle after mm-hmm. that for the last 4 miles. The last 4 miles were super tough. But I did PR at mm-hmm. Big Sur.
Yay.
I ended up running a 4:59, I think 20, mm-hmm. something like that. Previous PR was my favorite time in the world, 4:59:59. So I knocked off, 39 seconds or something like that. So
seconds.
I didn't knock off a lot of time off my PR, but I wasn't planning on PRing. And that's a very small amount to PR by, but considering this was a pretty tough course, I'm super excited and super happy about that. I definitely lost a lot of time over the last 4 miles and a lot of the, you know, I definitely gave time back the last 8 miles for sure. It's one of those where I started fast. I banked a lot of time, which I'm not saying to do that because mm-hmm. I don't think that's a good way to do it.
This is just what you did?
Even split, I think, is the way to go.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of time banked because I did run pretty fast early on. Mm-hmm. So I could kind of afford to give that time away and still run a PR. But I definitely knew it the last 2 miles in my head. I was trying to do that thing you do, you know, with the math. And
Which gets really difficult at that time and you like cannot add.
Super hard.
Yeah.
And it definitely felt...
You're like, where's a calculator when you need it?
Well, I was doing the math in my head and okay, I'm, you know, by that point, I'm doing a lot of walking and running mixed in and it ends up being short bursts of running and longer bursts of walking and you get to the hills and I would just walk the hills at the end mm-hmm. completely and okay, downhill, let me try to get some time back. But I was so beat at that point. My calves were pretty shot by the end of the race. They were super, super pain on the calves. And I think... We were talking about it after. Part of that, I think, was walking so much of the hills. I think when you walk, if you imagine yourself walking, I was taking kind of big steps to walk, and I have long legs, and I was trying to walk with purpose and speed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you kind of elongate your calf a little bit more mm-hmm. when you're walking versus you're running up the hill.
Yeah.
So I think walking all the hills that I did actually made it a little bit worse on my calves.
Right.
So while I was saving some energy and not killing myself climbing hills, I think it kind of burned up my calves a little bit. So I was definitely... pretty beat up by that at the end. And then it definitely felt warm at 25. I was actually warm. I was hot. It felt like it was 80 degrees. I know it was nowhere near 80 degrees, but it felt like 80 degrees to me at mile 25 because the sun is just beating on you. And I crossed the finish line. And like I said, I like to use the term toast. I was pretty much toast at the end of that thing. I just wanted to sit down and,
You seemed a little toasty when I saw you.
Yeah, I was trying to look for you and some other people, and we had decided to meet up by the soup tent, and I can't remember where the soup tent was.
And you even took a picture of it.
But I didn't remember I had a picture of it, so I was just kind of out of it and super beat and super tired, and I was just, okay, where's everybody? Let me sit down for a minute, and then I think I sat down for a couple minutes, and I was just basically ready to, let's get out of here, which is why I said I wasn't at the finish line that long, because I was just toasty and wanted to get out of there and be done. So the one thing I can say is I felt, which is kind of a change, I felt healthy for the entire race.
Mm-hmm.
Like my knee didn't give me any problems whatsoever. So, I mean, it's kind of one of those where I almost say like no excuses or anything, no mm-hmm. injuries. The knee felt fine. The shin that I kind of was worried about just because of the pounding from the downhill felt fine.
Mm-hmm.
The only issue that I had during the race was just my calves pretty burned up and pretty tired. And,
yeah. But not necessarily an injury. That's just from the work you're putting in.
But so I got my tiny little PR, which I was excited about and kind of unexpected. And on a tough course, I was super excited and super happy about that. Mm-hmm. Although, to be honest, when I crossed the finish line, I didn't know what my exact time was.
Yeah.
So I think you asked, did you get it? I think so. I'm not sure. Maybe. Got to wait for the official time.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that was kind of my race. So I'm, like I said, pretty happy, pretty excited. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think a PR is a PR, whether it's 39 seconds or, I don't know, 15 minutes. And especially, like you said, you felt better overall mm-hmm. than you have in the past, which I think that by itself is big.
Mm-hmm.
And then on a different course, stopping for pictures.
Well, I think this is going to be I think my new strategy is just going to be, you know, 30, 40 second PRs every race.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can keep PRing for the next for 10 years.
Yeah.
I figure that should not be a problem, right? Go. So I can come on here every couple months and, hey, I got another PR 45 seconds.
45 seconds.
Yeah, that's great.
There you go.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's one way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So tell me a little bit about your race.
Yeah. So before I do that, I just had a couple of general things that I remembered. One was mile markers. Mm-hmm. At every mile.
Oh, yeah,
mile.
We're going to talk about that.
And they were all, you know, sponsored, and so they had, but they also, they had a lot of different little, like, running-themed
mm-hmm.
captions or...
It was actually almost like caricature.
Yeah,
caricature pictures. So I know 20 was a guy hitting the wall.
Right,
course,
right.
And one of them said going up right before the climb to Hurricane
Point. One of them, I think it was, like, mile 25. Somebody was, like, crawling on the ground or something, so...
So it was actually a pretty good comic relief
mm-hmm.
every mile.
It was
and
nice.
You kind of looked for something. One was a picture of some Kenyans. And I think the little bubble quote with what they were saying said, I think we call this walking in my country or something like that.
Yeah.
Somewhere to that. So kind of every mile you had a nice little laugh.
So it was kind of nice knowing that you were going to see something new
mm-hmm.
at the next mile. And, oh, what's it going to be? You know, so. And then just a couple of other random things. Dean Karnazes mm-hmm. was there. And he actually ran from the finish to the start before starting the marathon.
Yeah.
And then running from start to the finish. So crazy, but hey, that's what he does, right?
He does that a lot.
That's what he does. And actually saw him like somewhere around mile two, just kind of came flying by me. So he's shorter than I envisioned him. What that has to do with the race? Nothing. But just wanted to mention that. And then actually saw Bart Yasso sticking his head out, saying something, cheering people as he was coming by in one of the official cars towards the beginning.
He wasn't running. So.
Right. Yeah. So those are just a couple of random things that I had thought about. Well. We were talking. So yeah, in terms of my race, I mentioned it last time that I wasn't going for a specific time
mm-hmm.
or I guess I was, cause I was running with a friend.
So you're going for their time.
I was going for her time. So I pretty much asked her what her time was and she was hoping for somewhere between 4:30, 4:45.
Mm-hmm.
Her marathon PR at that point was 4:36, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, I'm like, okay, you know, just kind of wanted an idea of what she was envisioning. So that was basically my goal, somewhere between 4:30, 4:45, have a good time, take some pictures, you know, enjoy it. Get a nice, super scenic, long training run in for my training plan. But yeah, I mean, the beginning of my race was pretty much what you described, you know, started off a little fast, you know, cause it's hard not to. Well, one, it's the beginning of the race, and two, it's downhill and you're excited and everybody's just kind of going a little bit faster. So I did have a throwaway that I ended up ditching at about mile two or whatever that first aid station was.
Mm-hmm.
Got rid of that one right away. Started off with gloves and ended up taking those off after a couple of miles too. I did run with my Nathan pack because I wanted to try a tailwind for a road marathon. And so it was easy for me to just kind of stash those in my pack. Mm-hmm. Not a big deal.
Also stashed my Armors too.
That was just convenient that actually... Yeah, that worked out.
Because of a sign that I was running a little bit too fast at the beginning, I actually caught up to you and our friend, I think at mile 7 or 8.
Something like that.
I actually came up behind you guys.
And so. I had a feeling, and I was like, hey, do you want to ditch your arm warmers? And you're like, what are you going to do? Put them in your back? I'm like, yeah, why not? So anyways,
that worked out perfect.
Yeah. So, you know, stopped for quite a few pictures of the lighthouse, Bixby Bridge, you know, just enjoyed it. Did a lot of talking back and forth, you know, for several miles, which always makes the miles kind of tick by quicker.
Mm-hmm.
But that's always kind of a catch 22 because the course was so beautiful that right. I like didn't want to like have it go by faster, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Even though I'm like, oh, 26 miles. Yeah, that's still a long, long ways away. It's a distance. But I'm like, oh, that's so pretty and I'm not going to get to see that again. Or, oh, that's so pretty and I'm not going to get to see that again. Oh, I just passed Bixby Bridge and I'm not going to get to run through it, you know, or run on it again. So it's kind of like bittersweet, but I was trying to like stay in the moment as much as I could and not think too much of what was coming up ahead other than like the strawberries, you know, of course. When coming up to the climb up towards Hurricane Point,
mm-hmm.
like I mentioned earlier, it wasn't as steep as I expected. And I was just going to do whatever our friend was doing, you know, mm-hmm. I was just going to, if she walked, I walked. And I told her, I said, hey, if you want to walk, no problem. Just let me know. We can walk. Otherwise, you know, I'll go with your pace. She didn't run. I mean, she didn't walk any of it. Mm-hmm. So that was awesome. And after that, it was just, like you said, you know, it was rolling hills, and some of those later little hills felt a lot bigger than what it looks like on the course map. In terms of fueling, I did use Tailwind, had Gatorade at a couple of aid stations more towards the end when it was just getting a little bit hotter, and fueled with, in terms of solid food, just a bunch of fruit. I had bananas at a couple of places. It wasn't like full bananas, you know, like, right. I was eating like a full banana at every aid station, but like banana pieces, orange slices, which always taste way better in a race than they do at
everything
home.
Tastes better in
yeah
a race.
They do. And then the strawberry, so that's actually all I did. I actually didn't do any gels or blocks or.
So how did you feel with just basically kind of Tailwind as your primary thing?
Felt good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't really have any, stomach issues. Actually, I take that back. It wasn't because of the Tailwind. I had a little bit of stomach cramping, but I realized it was because I had a full bladder that was causing my cramping. So as soon as I took care of that issue, I was fine. So, but yeah, I really didn't have any like GI issues. I didn't feel like I, you know, was bonking or hitting mm-hmm. the wall at any point because of like blood sugar or, you know, carbs or glycogen stores, you know, hitting a low. I felt pretty steady. I mean, I started feeling tired, but that was just more of like the cumulative,
right,
you know, fatigue, and not so much because I wasn't fueling. So I don't know what it would have felt like if I hadn't had the fruit, because I've mentioned previously too, and I still stick by it, I do really well with bananas mm-hmm. while running. So I think the fact that I did that plus a Tailwind worked out really well. Although I guess if there hadn't been fruit, if there hadn't been any sort of solid food, probably would have supplemented with a goo, which I did have with me just in case. But yeah, I felt fine. Felt
yeah,
good nutrition wise. Yep. I mean, and I used it for Way Too Cool, mm-hmm. which is, I was out there for a longer time, you know, longer distance, and it worked fine, but I was just kind of curious how it would feel for a road marathon. Although I think if I want to be speedier, mm-hmm. you know, in another marathon, I don't necessarily want to take a pack.
Well, that's it. I'd ask you about that, because if you were running a race just for yourself, for your own time, maybe going for a PR or a fast time, you said you wouldn't do a pack, right?
Right.
Because it just feels heavy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes my shoulders like hurt a little bit. Even if I try not to tense them, it's just added weight, you know, for a while. So.
And then that's when I made the suggestion, maybe you should run Napa Valley Marathon, because you can put your own bottles out there on course.
Right.
And then you can have your Tailwind, but
exactly.
not have to carry a pack.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yep. I could have my Tailwind and drink it too, right? Just like you could have your cake and eat it too. Yeah, I'm not opposed to not to derail the conversation, but I'm not opposed to doing Napa Valley. I think you are. I don't know if you do it though.
Yeah,
Not to say that because I do it, you have to do it,
right,
but
right.
just
yeah. easier time getting you to do it than me at this point.
Right. But, yeah. So something to look into. But okay, so interesting thing about the time before I get to the actual total time that mm-hmm. we did. Our time, or my time, for the first 13.1 miles mm-hmm. was a 2:16:06.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wait, why do you say wow?
Well, because then you negative split it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm like, wait, what does that mean? Is that a good or a bad wow? So we actually, if you remember, the goal was to come between 4:30, 4:45. Mm-hmm. As the race went on, she really wanted to try to stay under 4:30. Mm-hmm. And we were very close to that for a long period of time. And ended up finishing in my time was 4:30:15. No, 4:30:16. Her time was 4:30:15. So she beat me by a second. But yeah, we actually ended up negative splitting the race.
Which is by two minutes. Really...
So it's actually pretty much even.
Yeah, I would call it an even split.
Which I think is pretty good. That means we were fairly consistent.
I think that's pretty amazing considering the course.
Yeah.
That's, I think, quite an accomplishment. And she got her goal, which was cool.
And a PR.
And a
marathon
PR. She
got
a marathon PR too, which again, I had no doubt
tough course.
Based on her training. But
yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, one thing to mention too is I haven't run, this is probably just the second marathon I've run with somebody mm-hmm. the entire time. Mm-hmm. First one being Disney World Marathon
right.
with you. It's just, it's fun running with somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, just having another person there, whether you talk about anything or not, just having them there. I mean, obviously we did talk about just random stuff, running related and not running related, and just, okay, yeah, you know, getting excited for the strawberries, and okay, you know, aid station coming up, what are you going to do? Okay, you know, oh, are you going to stop for this picture? Okay, you stop for that one, and then, you know, catch up to me or that sort of thing. I did do that a couple of times, which also made me feel like Disney, where I'd kind of run up ahead, take a picture,
uh-huh.
and then, you know, she'd pass me as I'm taking the picture, and then I got to work my way to catch back up to her. So, yeah, that was tough kind of in a different way, too, because I was having to work to catch back up to her.
So you were doing your own Disney race?
I was doing my own Disney race, yeah. Yeah, I had Ad blast. It was fun.
Yeah, it's...
I can't say, like, enough good things about it. I think organization was... I had, like, everything was perfect. Weather was perfect, which I know they have no control over, but if they did, thanks. Views, awesome. Course is amazing. It's not an easy course.
Right, right.
But it's totally worth it.
Yeah, I don't think you should come to Big Sur with looking for a PR. Certainly not, because it's not the course for that.
Right.
You know,
depending. But it can happen.
But it can happen. And you can run well. I think in some ways, I think the entire race was easier than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. That might sound weird to say. It's a super tough course, but it was still easier than what I feared it might be.
But I think that's good. I think it's better to have that, be able to say that versus, oh my gosh, it was way harder, you know, that I had envisioned.
But, I talked about before, this was kind of a bucket list race for me to do someday in my life. And I'm extremely happy that I did do it. I think it's definitely worth, you know, if you're looking for a marathon, I think everybody should come out and do Big Sur at least once.
Agreed.
Especially if you're out here on the West Coast. If you're in California, you have no excuse not to do Big Sur at some point in time. I almost want to say you might not want to do Big Sur for your first marathon, just because, number one, it's a pretty tough course.
Yeah.
And number two, I always say you'll be kind of spoiled for future races.
Right. Expecting all those great ocean views. Yeah. Or...
but it truly is a very unique opportunity to kind of run along the coast, and running along the coast away from cities and a very, very cool backdrop with lots of things to see and kind of a perfect sized race in a lot of ways. It wasn't crazy crowded or anything out there. There's kind of, you know, once you got past the first couple miles, there was room to kind of spread out and run your pace and do your thing and get whatever you wanted out of it. So
yeah, and it wasn't, you weren't lonely out there either. It wasn't a case where you felt really lonely, but there wasn't an issue in terms of having to try to maneuver around people. Nope, you know, where you're like, oh, I got to try to dodge around these people, or they're dodging around me. It just was a good size.
Yeah. So I definitely encourage everybody at some point, like I said, come out and do Big Sur. It's a pretty cool race. You know, if you don't have the ability to do, you don't think you're ready to do the full marathon, there's always the 21 miler.
Yeah.
An option, which is kind of a cool distance, because, you know, I talked about 22 kind of getting pretty beat at 22. Yeah. So 21 seems like a really good place to stop, right? Before you get
feeling. Yeah.
And then there's also the 10.6 and the 9 miler. That's a little bit different. So there's kind of options for everybody, or if you're coming out with family or friends, there's kind of maybe a different distance for everybody. So lots of opportunities. So I think everybody come out here at some point and do the race. It's definitely a pretty awesome race. They've been doing it for 29 years. Next year is an anniversary year.
Mm-hmm.
I think at some point I'll probably come back and do it again.
Yeah, I would too.
I think.
For sure.
For sure. I think not necessarily anytime soon. I think I was thinking about maybe coming back soon to do the 10.6 or the 9 or the 21. I think it'd be kind of cool.
Just do something different. Yeah. Yeah.
And having not been to the kind of Monterey, Carmel, California coast area in a while, in my head I was kind of, oh, I should come back and do the 21 or the 10, and I won't be so beat up and so tired, and kind of have some time to do some sightseeing.
Yeah.
You know, stuff I've seen
enjoy
before,
the area,
but it'll
a bit
kind of
more.
Be, it's been a while, so it'd be kind of cool to check out some of that stuff again.
Yeah. I'd totally do it again.
So get out there and run Big Sur. It's a pretty cool race.
And then just word to the wise in terms of registration for the full marathon. This last year, it sold out in less than an hour.
Yes.
So if you're going to do it, it's not one that you can wait on.
Yeah. And I'm not sure what's going to happen this coming year with the registration for that. So it's
a whole different ballgame.
It's going to be either selling out in under an hour, or are they going to have to go lottery? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, 30th anniversary. I don't know. Oh, we haven't talked about the medals.
Oh, yeah.
So pretty unique medals.
Yeah.
It's ceramic, right?
Yeah.
Ceramic metal kind of looks very outdoorsy, nature-ish, are those words to describe, with like a leather strap that goes around your neck.
Yeah, instead of the traditional ribbon.
Yeah. So pretty cool, definitely unique looking, and it's like that for all the distances, kind of looking like that. So, but also we should mention the overall winners of the marathon, Michael Wardian, which is a name a lot of people know.
Yep.
And Nuta Olaro was the female winner.
Mm-hmm.
And they both just did Boston the week before.
Right.
The one thing we didn't mention is they actually have a special thing for Boston to Big Sur.
Right.
Because they're 1 week apart.
Although they're not always 1 week apart.
Not always. But
a lot of times they're 2 weeks apart.
Right.
But still kind of doing Boston to Big Sur is it's a whole separate thing or challenge.
So the one thing we saw all weekend long was lots of Boston jackets from this year and past years. And even during the race, we were making the joke because you saw somebody toss their Boston shirt.
In the trash.
During the race.
Like as a throwaway.
Right.
Yeah. And there was like several people like, that is one shirt I would not throw away, you know, and then, you know, I'm talking to my friend and she's like, I would figure out a way to tie that shirt around me. I'm like, I'd carry it in my hand if I had to. But then you mentioned I wouldn't even bring it as, you know,
I
possible throwaway. Like, that's just, I'll just wear it later.
It would just be at home on a frame. No. Well, the thing I was telling you is if I actually qualified for Boston and I ran Boston, and I would think we've always joked about I'd probably buy a lot of merchandise. But I was saying, you know, because who knows if I'll ever go back to Boston or do it again or anything like that, I would buy maybe 5 of the exact same shirts. So I'd be good for the next 20 years, you
You're
know, with
good.
Your Boston gear and all that stuff. Yeah, yeah, you'd just be like set. So you could wear it. You could wear it, you know, use the heck out of it.
And you have another one.
Out,
and then you
just
start wearing the next
yeah,
one.
Yeah, you wear the next one. So
yeah, you'd have backups.
That'd be my plan. So what did we mention? We mentioned those big names. The one big downer from the weekend, mm-hmm. which we should mention, is a very sad case where we actually had one death at the race.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, it was actually a volunteer who right. actually collapsed. It was one of the course marshals. From what we understand, there's actually only been one news article that kind of hit the wires about it and some comments on Facebook, but was a volunteer who was a course marshal on a bike who apparently collapsed.
Not while riding the bike.
Yeah,
he
was just standing there
and talking. And
he collapsed. There was actually people around him immediately able to perform CPR
right.
And give aid. From some of the stories we saw, there was actually several runners who were nurses and doctors who actually stopped to assist. Eventually, ambulance did arrive, take it to the hospital, but unfortunately, that person did pass away.
Right.
Don't have any other information about that. Other than that, you actually passed by the scene.
I did.
At the time.
Yeah.
All that happened, I passed through kind of the aftermath with emergency personnel still there. And we were actually directed to the other lane on the freeway so there could be room
yeah, we
for
got
all that
shift,
stuff.
We got shifted over yeah, to the other lane. And I do have to say, you know, seeing that, even though I've, with work that I do, I've seen that before. You know, it's not the first time I've seen that, but it's still... It's very like real, you know, mm-hmm. and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but it's, you know, it makes it very real. And I think I have to say that as wonderful as the course is and as much fun as you're having out there, when you see that, I just kind of felt like just the attitude or feeling mm-hmm. of the runners kind of change.
Yeah.
For a little while, like everybody was just kind of quiet and it just felt different. Like the energy level was just very different, you know, as you were kind of thinking about that individual and hoping that right. they'd pull through. So, yeah.
Yeah. So that was obviously very sad, and our thoughts and prayers go out to. It was a man, right?
Yeah,
to his friends and family. So, yeah. So I think that's going to wrap it up for Big Sur.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, get out there at some point. I do want to give a shout out to Heather and Todd, who we actually did get to run into at the expo,
yeah.
and I think Jonathan was out there running the race. Assuming you finished, had a good race.
Yeah.
Yeah. So should we, what do we want to say? We want to wish some people got some races coming up. We
yeah,
heard from
do.
Brian, who's doing Miwok 100K because Brian's crazy and likes to run crazy distances.
I just didn't expect that. So, yeah. So, but that's awesome.
But yeah, he's doing the Miwok 100K. Miwok's definitely a well-known.
Better you than
ultra.
Me, Brian. No.
Definitely me. So,
but that's awesome. Go for
so
it.
So good luck.
Have fun.
At that race. Scott's going to be out there at Western Pacific and Hannah is going to be doing the exact same race as we are next mm-hmm. weekend, but she's doing it from very far away. She's in the UK. We'll be in Southern California. Our next race is Wings for Life. There's no distance because
yeah.
we'll be
Wings
chased
for life,
by
world
a car,
run.
And
yeah.
our race will end when that car catches us,
right?
I guess is how it works. It'll be interesting this week, kind of recovering from the marathon, but then doing this oddball, really weird race coming up. So,
which is kind of weird because you don't know how to... Like, what distance am I going to run? I don't know.
I don't know
You just
kind of
have to be... Like, I know it's going to be probably more than this and less than that, but I don't know the mileage.
Yeah. So, next yeah. week, we'll obviously have a little bit of a recap on whatever that race is about and
yeah.
how it goes. At least all the money goes to charity, which is actually a pretty cool, unique thing that you don't see all the time. So,
right.
Should we get to a little bit of feedback?
Yeah.
Incoming message.
So, we did hear from Tara, who... did clarify for us. We were talking about her doing her indoor laps, and she does use a lap counter on her Pebble watch.
Right.
Which I'm actually jealous because she has a Pebble. Because otherwise, there's no other way to keep track of laps, I think, without using some kind of
something,
electronics.
Right.
Unless you have a friend who maybe wants to stand there and count
but
laps.
But maybe they
you.
Would, like, lose track, too. Be distracted and not see it come through.
That would actually be the best way, is just yeah. have somebody there. Hey, you know, you mind counting laps
you
for
gotta
me
for the
next...
You got to find somebody yeah. who's...
You'd probably have to pay them.
Yeah.
We heard from Beth, who actually completely agreed that running a route in reverse is extremely weird.
Yeah.
And she said it seems longer.
Yeah, when she runs it in reverse.
Yeah.
Like
I don't,
what she
I don't
normally
remember
runs.
If it felt longer or
it just
not
felt,
to
it just
be.
It just felt weird.
Definitely super weird.
Yeah.
And yeah, she let us know also about the Bandits of Boston. Like I said, that was kind of blowing up this past week. Same thing. Scott let us know about the Foursquare angle mm-hmm. on the whole Boston thing. and who else? We heard from Robert, who is actually going to be doing Glass City Marathon.
Uh-huh.
So hopefully that went well. Second marathon.
Yeah.
So obviously you didn't get scared away by doing it once.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's good to have you back for more. Again. Travis let us know that Dean Karnazes was going to be at Big Sur, and emailed us a picture of his medal, which was Oz themed,
mm-hmm.
Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, the Garmin half marathon.
Yeah, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Unique. So I wouldn't mind that medal. We already mentioned Brian doing Miwok. That's his first 100K. I don't know if we said that or not. And he just did a Wake Sonoma 50. So
right.
That's why I say Brian's crazy, because he runs a crazy amount of mileage.
Yeah, but that's good. I think that was...
We already mentioned Dave, who kind of had his opinions on the Boston Bandits.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's probably the best way to consider it. So I think that's going to do it. I think we talked a lot about Big Sur. As you heard, we definitely said you should do it at some point in time.
It deserved a lot of our time, though. Talking about it, because it was awesome.
And maybe next week we'll actually mention the things that we probably forgot to mention.
Because I'm sure there's tons of stuff.
Right.
So we'll do like a little old business.
Old business. Yeah. And look for the pictures from the race on our Facebook and our Google Plus page.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, next week we'll be doing the wrap up from Wings for Life World Run.
Yeah.
All going on around the world. So that'll be kind of unique. So
I
think that's going to do it. You got anything else?
That's it.
All right. We're out of here.
The website for the podcast is embracerunning.com. You could find us on Facebook at facebook.com/embracerunning. Send us any comments, questions, or feedback at feedback@embracerunning.com or leave us a voicemail at 925-400-7223. If you enjoy the show, give us a review on iTunes. So until next time, embrace running.